Well, the country's largest insurer is rolling out its own collision repair facilities around the country. But industry leaders warn it will bring reduced consumer choice and poor quality control. IAG, which includes NZI, State, AMI and Lumley, is opening its own panel beating outlets in Christchurch, Wellington and Hamilton to join those already established in Auckland. This means IAG will be assessing, paying for and completing the vehicle repair. The Collision Repair Association, which represents panel beaters and auto refinish painters, says the move will leave thousands of consumers without choice and without a third party to have quality control oversight. IAG rejects this, saying the new outlets will maintain quality, and overseas this end-to-end model gets customers back on the road quicker. To discuss, we welcome Neil Pritchard, General Manager of the Auckland Repair, the Collision Repair Association. He's in the Auckland studio. Good morning, Neil.
Yeah, good morning, Catherine.
Good morning also in the Christchurch studio to Dean McGregor, Executive General Manager Claims, IAG. Hello, Dean.
Yes, good morning.
Neil, let's hear first what the concerns are with what is being proposed.
Well, I guess it's fair to say that a lot of people in the industry don't think that insurance companies have any business repairing cars. The major concern there is that the consumer puts an awful lot of confidence in one organisation. So the consumer pays their premium to the insurer. The insurer decides on the validity of the claim. And now with this model, they also repair the vehicles. So I guess the question is asked, who's in the consumer's corner under that model?
You're raising wider issues as well, though, with respect to the overall industry. And is that where your concerns are coming from? How is this going to affect the independents?
OK, so the way this will work is that IAG have said that they will have up to 10 to 12 shops around the country in those four major centres that you mentioned. This creates a lot of uncertainty in the market. So they have quite an extensive repairer network right now, and that repairer network is worried that they're going to lose their business. So under those circumstances, it's really difficult to invest in your business when you're so unsure of the future. So that can affect both capital equipment and technician training.
So you're worried about loss of business. Do you believe there will be a division of labour in this plan somehow? Do you believe that IAG will seek to do all repairs, including the most complex, through its repair hub? Or do you think things might operate a bit more in a bit more of a niche manner?
A bit more of a niche manner is the way that it's been tabled, that they'll be doing the smaller, simpler jobs, non-structural, largely non-structural, one, two, possibly even three panels. And, you know, the way that the insurance, the way that the collision repair industry works under insurance is that these are kind of the easiest jobs to do. And in some ways, the mix of those jobs with the more complex structural repair jobs helps to make the whole thing work.
Are they easier money, essentially? So as part of your overall revenue flow, they're good to have.
Well, I couldn't say it's easy money, Catherine. I can't say there's any easy money.
Easier money. Certainly, easier than the complex jobs.
Certainly easier than the complex jobs, yes.
So
yes.
Are you fearing there'll be a cherry-picking of the more cost-effective jobs by the insurer's own repairers, and then the more complex and more complex jobs will be predominantly left with the independents? Is that what you're saying?
That is what I'm saying.
Right. And the effect on the revenue and the investment for the independents then is what? Everything. At a time when your investments are getting more expensive, your revenue flows will be more challenging.
Well, not only are revenue flows more challenging, but it's that element of confidence, having the confidence to invest in your business under the axe, if you like, or the potential axe of a repair hub opening, you know, in your neighbourhood and sucking up, you know, anything up to 100 jobs a week of those more lucrative and easier jobs. And, you know, just to put that in perspective, if you have 10 to 12 repair hubs doing between 80 and 100 jobs a week, that adds up to something close to 50,000 jobs a year. That's a big chunk of the market.
Is that what you have calculated from what you've seen announced?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you believe Indies will close down?
Oh,
some,
yeah. No,
some will.
No question. They'll certainly have to change their business model, and I would say some will close down. I mean, not only is there going to be competition for those great jobs, for those better jobs, but also staff. So, you know, like many other industries, we suffer a bit from lack of skilled staff, and there's only so many to go around. Now, you know, where's IAG's or Repair Hub's staff going to come from? They're going to come from the industry. So, another hit.
I want to talk about why this matters as a bigger picture, because the consumer just wants their car fixed. If they can get it fixed cheaper by someone else, or as long as someone does the right job, right price, you know, c'est la vie. But you're raising another matter, which is the level of investment required by this industry at the moment. And this relates to the more complex vehicles, the more computerised vehicles that we're getting, but also the anticipated significant increase in the electric vehicle fleet. Now, it has a very different set of complexities around repair. Could you explain?
OK, so the big thing that we do know is that electric vehicles are going to become more prevalent. I've seen some projections where the production of EVs starts to outstrip the production of traditional internal combustion engine vehicles after about 10 to 12 years from now. So, and during all that time, EV production is ramping up. That means that they're coming into shops on a much more regular basis. Now, there are all sorts of health and safety considerations around dealing with electric vehicles. But more broadly, newer cars using different types of materials, aluminium, high-strength steel, composite materials, plastics. And the whole business of putting a car back together again just gets more and more complicated. Added to that, you now have this thing called ADAS, Advanced Driver Assist Systems, which is your lane departure warning, your reactive cruise control, your automated braking, your pedestrian safety systems. These are all on the extremities of the car and need to be recalibrated in the event of an accident. All this does is going to make the whole repair process more and more complex. Now, once you start taking out a whole lot of work from that and changing the dynamic, you know, you risk a whole lot of stuff. And that's where this concern around business confidence is born. So how do we invest in training and in equipment levels, you know, under the sword of Damocles of a repair hub opening next door?
So let's talk about those investments. With the electrics, the batteries complicate things and it changes the way you can paint a car, repaint a car after an accident, right? You've got greater fire risk, you've got greater electrocution risk. And does that fundamentally alter the way a paint finisher deals with an electric vehicle?
Absolutely, it does. In most cases, the battery needs to be removed from the vehicle if it's going into a spray booth, as it will be if it's a significant paint job. So yes, it absolutely makes a difference. And you know, there are studies in the States that say that some of this work takes significantly longer, you know, than a traditional internal combustion engine vehicle.
So it's a more. Yes, I understand. So what does this mean for the investments that the industry is making? I mean, what percentage of revenue per year or profit per year is invested in these new, more complex systems?
It varies greatly, Catherine. So all responsible insurers are investing significant sums in training to make sure that their technicians are aware of all these additional considerations. When you go to buy new equipment, it can be anything. You can spend $200,000 on a state-of-the-art spray booth. You know, a new welder might cost you $40,000-$50,000. These sorts of purchases need to be made all the time. We're now talking about, with ADAS, you're now talking about scanning equipment and possibly even recalibration equipment, all of which comes at a price, not only in terms of the equipment you have to buy, but again, the training that your technicians need to go through and, in some cases, the layout of your shop.
You said insurers, but did you mean repairers making these investments?
I absolutely did, sorry.
All right, that's fine.
Well spotted.
Well, that's a question. A question we'll put to the insurer in a moment. But the other point I wanted to make is that the Collision Repair Association, I understand, has introduced new standards to deal with these challenges of electric vehicles, of the more computerised vehicles. What does that new standard involve? So this thing called ICAR, is it?
So ICAR is a separate organisation completely from the CRA.
Okay.
It is a training organisation that operates under an agreement from ICAR USA, and it delivers training to technicians and indeed to assessors. And to everyone in the industry. Yeah, so that's really important. It also works hand-in-hand with MITO, the Motor Industry Training Organisation, and a lot of the ICAR material is embedded in apprentice training that MITO deliver online. So, yeah, technicians in this country grow up breathing ICAR, and that's something that continues on even after they become qualified technicians.
Are these costs and investments being handed on somehow in the prices charged to the current insurers or charged to the consumer?
A really good question. So one of the unique things about our industry is that by and large, the repairers are price takers, not price makers. So what I mean by that is that insurers pay what they pay to have a car repaired. And there's a, you know, all vehicles are assessed by the insurance company, and it's not just a question of open slather. So it's not like a normal marketplace where there's competition that eventually lands on a price. The price is to some extent manipulated by the insurers, and a lot of repairers would say kept artificially low by insurers.
Stay with us, Neil. Let's bring in Dean McGregor, Executive General Manager Claims IAG. Thanks again for your time, Dean.
Good morning, Catherine.
How do you respond to the concerns raised by the Collision Repair Association?
Well, Catherine, I think it's really important to start with for listeners to understand what Repair Hub's all about and some of the rationale for us starting that business. And just to sort of to touch on that, it's a dedicated collision repair service for our IAG customers. So it's those customers that are insured through our brand. So that's AMI State, NZI Lumley, and through our bank partners. But when we put this business together, we really did it around talking to our customers and listening to what their needs were, and particularly what they said they wanted from a repair experience. And it's really simple. There's three things that they told us consistently. The first was quality repairs, so that's our number one priority. Secondly, it's better communication. And thirdly, an overall better experience. And look, I've got to say, you know, we've had well over 4,000 repairs through our pilot site in East Tamaki in Auckland, and we're getting a big thumbs up from our customers. So the feedback that we get every day, it includes things like, you know, what great friendly service, but also how professional the repairs are. So, you know, and now that's backed up by our research as well. So it's not just what we're sort of seeing through the anecdotal feedback. You know, we're getting a net promoter score, which is, you know, how many customers would promote that service to friends or family, of 4.8 out of 5. And, you know, you'd have to say by any stretch, that is a really, really strong result. So, you know,
Can I ask you what the nature of those repairs have been in the Auckland Repair Hub? Are they at the more superficial damage end or the more complex end?
Yeah, absolutely, Catherine. So there's a very clear scope that we work to, which is non-structural repairs. And so if it requires sort of anything more than sort of any significant welding, we might do a rear quarter panel or a radiator support beam. But beyond that, anything that's significantly structural is definitely not in the scope of repair.
So you'd be failing pretty badly if you weren't getting a very high score on the simplest repairs, wouldn't you?
Oh, no, believe me, you know, like lots of car owners, we're very passionate about our cars. You know, if you don't get that paint finish absolutely right, or, you know, the repairs or the alignment of panels and all those things, they need to be absolutely spot on. And our customers would certainly tell us. And we know part of the success is the rework rates is very low in Repair Hub. And that's because we have quality control checks in place at every stage of the repair.
But the argument could also be, Dean, it's because they're the simplest and most straightforward repairs that you're doing.
Oh, look, Neil called it out really well, actually. He said that, you know, vehicles are getting more and more complex. You know, I don't know that there's such a thing as a very straightforward or easy repair. You know, when you're dealing with complex materials, paints, paint finishes, some of the finishes, you know, have got multiple layers to them. I don't think there's anything terribly easy in this industry, and that's part of the acknowledgement of, you know, why we're investing as well, so that we can continue to invest in the training and the equipment standards that are required to support, you know, these really good repairs for our customers.
So with the new repair hubs rolling out, again, will it be targeted at that more basic end?
That's the scope. So that's the actual scope that we're sticking to. So, yes.
So the question then is, why are you doing it?
We're doing it because that's our customers were really clear with us around the experience that they wanted to achieve. And, you know, it's fair to say some repairers were doing a good job of that, but not consistently. And so what we wanted to do, and we've given this feedback to our partnerships, you know, in the industry over many years around what we wanted to achieve for our customers. And we've decided, well, let's put our money where our mouth is and see whether we can support this process as well. And that's exactly what we're doing. And we're getting the confidence of those results. And that's telling us that we're getting it right.
But again, you're cherry picking the most straightforward jobs, and the heavy lifting is being left on an industry that is losing some of its most important revenue stream, being the more basic jobs.
Yeah, I'd refute that, Catherine. I'd say that, you know, all of the work, and sort of Neil described it as being manipulated by insurers. I mean, that's incredibly wrong. I can tell you the process of how a vehicle is priced. And for us in IAG, that always starts with engaging with the repairers and understanding from them what they think it will cost to repair and the strategy required to repair that vehicle. Now, then what we look to is to validate that, to make sure that, yes, all of that repair was accident damage related, that it relates to the claim, that, yes, that's the best way of repairing the vehicle. And look, it comes back to the fact that IAG will never support the repair of a vehicle that does not meet the manufacturer's specifications. So safety is paramount. We must get that right first. And we definitely engage with our repairers in terms of what the true costs of repairing the vehicle are.
Here's the thing. If we lose a whole bunch of indies because their business model is disrupted, who is going to invest in these ever more complex repairs, particularly as the electric vehicle fleet ramps up, and we expect it will significantly by the 2030s when we're looking at European countries' moves, for example. Who is going to invest in those repairs if we lose a significant number of players from the independent industry?
Catherine, I think there's probably sort of a risk here that we're getting sort of a little bit sort of worried about sort of, you know, sort of a mass wholesale loss of repairers within the industry. That's not going to be the case at all. Repair Hub is not designed to take the majority of the work out of the market. We've identified a clear scope of work, and we know that having a strong collision repair industry is important to everyone. So, and that's important to our customers as well, who retain choice around where they have their vehicles repaired. So, you know, we think that there is a great option here in Repair Hub because we know that we can give a great customer experience and a great quality repair, but it's not taking all the work out of the market.
What they're saying is it's taking the most lucrative work out of the market. And here's the thing, if you're that concerned about your customer and you believe that the quality of your customer satisfaction is going to be that much higher, why don't you extend it into the more complex work and invest yourself in the more expensive equipment and training?
Well, it's about where the volumes sit in terms of the overall repairs. And you've got to remember that most accidents occur and they're not significant, you know, structural damage. But in saying that, actually, we do want to partner, and we do today partner with our repairers, and we make sure that if there's a vehicle that is structurally damaged, that it gets to the right repairer. So, and we know they're the repairers that do invest today, and we partner really well with them. We work with them through our own research teams. We make sure that they have absolutely the right equipment and the right standards and the right training to be able to carry out those repairs safely for our customers. So
right.
We very much take a partnership approach to this.
What about the issue of having no third-party oversight and checks? The industry says you keep a very close eye on it. You require verification photographs to be taken at every stage of a repair. Who's going to be doing that when you're running your own repair hubs?
Well, in fact, I would say it's even more stringent in the repair hub business. So we have exactly the same checks that we have in place as we do with our independent repairers. So our assessors are looking at the quality of those repairs. In addition to that, in repair hub, we also have some external advisors that come in and audit those processes and the quality at the same time. So I would say actually we go a step further, and we sort of really promote quality as an absolute outcome that we must achieve.
Will this save the insurers money, do you believe?
Oh, look, I think there's undoubtedly efficiencies to be gained in here. What we observed was that there are international trends around specialising in these types of repairs. And if you get that right with high-quality equipment, great products around the paint and the processes and the training of the people, then actually we can get our customers back on the road faster. And time means money for everyone, so that means that actually we can reduce the cost of the repairs, and that ultimately means that we keep insurance affordable for our customers as well. So, yes, I think there are some efficiency gains to be had by specialising in this area.
You talk about choice. If someone comes in with a relatively superficial event on their car and wants to use their indie and not the repair hub, will they be fully funded to the costs charged by the independent?
Oh, every claim needs to be treated on its merit. So if a customer wants to choose their own repairer, that's well within their rights to do so, and then we work with that repairer to make sure that those repairs are carried out to the industry or the manufacturer specifications, and then we meet the cost of that. So,
if it's accepted as a fair and reasonable quote by the independent, will IAG companies fully fund that, even if they have a repair hub available?
Oh, absolutely. The choice of repairer is ultimately the customer's. We believe we've created a great option for customers here, but ultimately if a customer chooses to have another repairer undertake the repairs on their car, then that is their choice.
All right.
And ultimately we absolutely allow and support that.
So, Neil Pritchard, that's kind of an out, isn't there? If the independents can hold on to their customers, do you believe that will happen? Coming back to Neil Pritchard of the Collision Repair Association.
Yeah, thanks, Catherine. Yes, another thing that Dean and IAG have signalled is that they intend to make choice of repairers an optional extra, which would cost more at the time of taking out a policy. So if that's the case, fewer people will take that option because no one plans to have an accident at the time that they sign up for a policy. There's no question that that choice of repairer is going to be more limited.
Your issue also, the industry's issue with IAG, the Collision Repair Association says IAG has become the lowest ranked insurer in the country according to its membership survey. But is that a survey of your members, not consumers?
That is a survey of our members, absolutely right. So we've just, at the tail end of last year, we ran the 11th annual survey, which we do jointly with the MTA. We had better than half of our membership respond, and by far the majority of those respondents are actually repairers for IAG as well. Now, this time round, IAG were on the bottom of that 15 insurance companies, so they were rated the lowest of 15.
And what makes up the ratings? What are the issues?
So there's something like 15 questions on three general topics. One's around financial, one's around the claims process, and one's around relationship management. Several questions on each of those topics. All those things go together for an overall rating. So there's a heap of questions around all sorts of things, but you know, speed of accepting the claim, speed of payment. And to be fair, IAG are really good at a lot of that stuff. But when it comes to the financial aspect of rewarding repairers for their work, they're at the bottom.
You're left wondering, Neil, if there is a disruption coming, and this might not be the only version of it, a disruption coming to the industry, and does it need to rethink the way it is modelled, whether it likes it or not?
I think there's an inevitability about consolidation, which is what you're talking about, and what Dean was talking about when he's talking about what's happening overseas. What's not happening overseas, in a general sense, is that insurance companies are owning collision repair shops. Indeed, it's my understanding that in some places that's not allowed. And that's kind of where our membership come from when it comes to this survey. Most of the comments around insurance companies owning collision repair shops say things like it shouldn't be allowed, it reduces confidence, who bats for the customer, it's not a level playing field, they're just cherry-picking all the good jobs. Those are the sorts of comments
right.
that repairers are making.
So if I come back again to Dean McGregor of IAG, in what countries is there a model exactly like this, where the insurer can also be the repairer?
Oh, look, we have it right here in New Zealand, Catherine. So,
well, it's in New Zealand, you know, yeah, but where else?
Outside of Repair Hub, I mean. So several years ago, we had Suncorp, which is better known as Vero and AA in the market here, set up their own shops under a business called Capital Smart. This is not a new concept at all.
Did it survive?
Ultimately, it's been a very successful business.
Okay.
It was sold recently for a significant sum.
Any other example overseas?
The concept around of these sort of specialised repairs is prevalent
sure,
throughout the world.
So but the US, owned by the UK, insurer. Owned by the insurer.
Oh, certainly in the UK market. I think there might be some restrictions in the US. I'm not 100% familiar with that, but absolutely, this is not a foreign concept at all.
Thanks, both of you, very much. I've been speaking there to Dean McGregor, Executive General Manager, Claims IAG, and also to Neil Pritchard, General Manager of the Collision Repair Association.